Witcher power.
You're listening to episode 12-3 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen, with me on this wild roller coaster ride of gaming impressions, interviews, trivia, and listener questions is Eric Blue Swim, aka Living Fluorescent Light.
Hey, since it's 2013 and it's a new year, this is the first new episode of the podcast for this year. I think we need a new meme. I think we need like an idol of the episode, where we pick a random hottie and make her the idol of the episode.
It sounds like you have an idol all picked out for me, Eric.
Can we nominate Maria Ozawa, Japanese porn star, for like the first idol of 2013 for the podcast?
I was supposed to say who?
Huh?
I nominate Robert's dog.
Are you familiar with her work?
Well, I do know she has screwed some tentacles.
All right.
Power Rangers quality rubber suit tentacles.
Also on this podcast, we got Jeremy, aka Remy Lamont.
My biggest muscle is my video game muscle.
I thought it was your brain.
It's my video game muscle.
Yeah, okay. So not with us tonight.
Do you want to see it?
Sure, show it to me. Let's compare.
Here you go.
Actually, the last time we talked, you beat me with your muscle, Jeremy.
It was good for me, too.
With us here tonight is Sage Samurage Morris Green, for undisclosed reasons, and Sean Nola Kirkland, who's out and probably will be gone for the next two shows as his work schedule has intensified. So he is certain to return in SD extra grumpy mode by episode 12-6 or 12-7, so fear not. And by the way, my new nickname, I'm the Repentant Eagle, after I was chastised for interrupting my fellow colleague. So welcome, the kinder, friendlier Desert.
We'll see about that.
To the party.
Mainly Jeremy. So let's kick things off with impressions.
Impressions.
I got one.
Impression.
Do you want to buy a duck?
No, thanks. But
how about that one?
Yeah. January, for me, is traditionally a time when money is a little tight and the sheen of holiday releases is beginning to lose its luster. So one of the things I sought out for listeners that may have a little bit of free time and don't want to spend a dime, hey, that rhymes, is Puzzle and Dragons. Have any of you guys played that?
No,
I played them separately, but never together.
Never together? Oh, I'm surprised you guys haven't heard about this one. As the name suggests, and I thought you might have heard, the game is this bewitching mix of Bejeweled. It's got a little puzzle quest and a dash of Pokemon, all simmered to perfection across the iOS and Android platforms. And I should mention that's free to play. And unlike many games that claim the same thing, know that I've put at least 10 hours in and haven't felt the need to reach into my wallet yet. Yeah, the game's currency, these rainbow-colored magic gems, are actually sitting in surplus right now. I haven't even touched them. So once you jump into the game, there's a tutorial that kind of guides you through combat. It looks like this conventional match three game, except the hook, I guess, is that you can move any single gem across the board, so you don't have to move it one space. And it totally throws me off when I go back to playing like Puzzle or something like that. So you have this stable of five monsters. They're all based on elements. And you can upgrade them by fusion, which is kind of absorbing different monster eggs. And those are acquired when you fight your way through the dungeons. And what makes the game unique are the style of the dungeons. Because you have to play online, which is kind of sucks for tablet owners that are away from a Wi-Fi signal, admit that. But there are promotional periods where certain dungeons offer things like 50% off stamina specials. And stamina is the way the game's method of ensuring kind of short play sessions. One of the things that it does very Nintendo-like is it tells you to limit your playtime to about an hour a day. which for a free-to-play, they probably don't want to tell you that. Probably my favorite are the tricolor dungeons, which, as far as I know, I've seen them twice on the weekends. And they remove kind of the yellow and purple gems. There's six gems colors, well, five different colors and hearts that give you back your HP. And you can rack up some really awesome combos against the monsters. And instead of giving players new eggs, which you use, again, to fuse, they give you a ton of currency. So, and currency, by that I mean coins, not real life, not the magic stone currency, is needed to improve your selection of monsters. You can take lesser monsters, you grind them up, and then you kind of feed them to your core team. There's level caps, which can be bypassed, kind of like Pokemon, by evolving. That takes you back to level 1, but keeps kind of your core stats and bonuses. So that allows you to create some really powerful beasts. And what's nice about Puzzles and Dragons is there's a good scalability. There's always something to do, and it never, unless you go into the special dungeons, which I did in accident, there's never any severe jumps in challenge. And one thing I forgot to mention, there's these rare monsters, and one of the best ways to earn these is to save what are called your pal points. And these are earned by taking one of your single friend creatures in the dungeon. So you get 200 of those, and you pull this little, I don't know if it's a paw, an arm, a foot of a dragon. Looks like this little Nico statue, and then it opens up its belly to reveal this little monster capsule there. This is the third title I played by Gung Ho Online. Dokuru and Ragnarok Odyssey were the others. And for me, I think this was really the wisest localization choice. Really cool game, addictive. You can play, 10, 15 minutes, free to play. And it, so far, doesn't feel like you really have to pay a lot of money to get in and to get ahead in the game. So really digging it.
And now just to clarify here, so this their other games were available on what, PlayStation Network, right? And this is iOS.
Dokuru was Vita. Ragnarok Odyssey was Vita. They also put out some PC games. And this is both iOS and recently Android.
Android. So I've got a question. So how would this play on a Vita? Would you like to see this on the Vita?
Yeah, the one thing is it needs a constant online connection. And for many Vita players, that's not always possible. I'd love to see it on there, but I think to stop people from cheating, because it does have kind of rare monsters and things like that, it's always online. Every time you enter a dungeon, it has to check the signal, and if your signal's not very good, it will tell you.
But you don't think they could make it just a standalone kind of experience with online elements?
I'd love to see that.
Well, the reason I ask is because you might remember last year I played a game, and as you were describing this, it reminded me a lot of Outernauts by Insomniac Games. You know, they have that that game on Facebook, which is also a sort of Pokemon sort of creature collectathon kind of experience. It doesn't have the dungeon crawling element like you described, but just the fact that it's kind of a new take on that old Pokemon formula. And I'd be kind of interested to see that. The two things that came to mind were, A, at the time I had said, oh, I would really love to see Outernauts on the Vita. So I was thinking, oh, I would really love to see something like this on the Vita. Like, it would be kind of neat. And they're planning on doing things like Soul Sacrifice is going to have kind of a collecting sort of, actually, I guess that's kind of more like a Monster Hunter kind of experience, I guess, is what they're saying that's going to be. But anyway, I was thinking that because it reminded me of Outernauts in both of those ways. And I know that they've recently revamped Outernauts. And you mentioned some of the same things with respect to this, they limit the playtime through energy, which is something that those freemium sorts of games do. And then you also had sort of mentioned, in fact, one of the first things you mentioned that I kind of noticed was that so far you haven't felt any need to pay. And I kind of wonder about that. Like, is that a good thing? Like, do you feel, so personally for you, that's probably good, right? Because you get the max entertainment.
Yes and no. I like to reward developers and I like to give a little back. And so I want, what was that game where you have different towers, build your own apartment building, and each floor, did you guys ever play that?
Tiny Tower.
And that one was kind of cool, and I gave him $5 just because I thought it was such a cool game.
But philanthropy aside, aside from that, like, is there a problem when you don't feel like, like there's something more for you to gain by, investing something more than your time in it? I mean, is that do you feel like it's a problem
from the developer's perspective?
Both. I'm kind of curious. I mean, wouldn't you know? And I guess I'm proposing something a little bit weird, but it seems to me like the optimum mix of something like this would be: I love this, and hey, I get something really great if I put money into it, and it just makes a good thing better.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's kind of, and I don't mean to talk it down or anything, but these were just thoughts that I was thinking as you were describing this. And I wonder if that's, I mean, potentially a problem.
Personally, subjectively, I don't mind grinding perhaps as much as the other person. And potentially you can avoid some of the grind by paying money, which gives you access to, you know, a greater likelihood to getting some of the rarer monsters. Does that make sense? So
it
does. If you don't mind grinding, then you don't have to pay. But if you tire of that, then I don't really see you wanting to play this game.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking because, you know, the thing about Outernauts that also came to mind was they recently revamped the whole thing. And I'll be honest, I was really high on Outernauts when I played it, but I kind of fell off. And there, you know, I had some difficulties. And it was still kind of a, you know, early you know, outing, so to speak. But they've basically, from what I understand, they've done away with the energy requirement. And so I was just kind of, I was wondering how something like that might compare to something like this that still uses some of those, you know, some of those freemium modes, those kinds of things. Yeah, exactly.
The one thing
but anyway,
I want to clarify is that there's really not too much dungeon crawling, although dungeons are the context. You only move forward through the dungeons, and it's just an aesthetic. You don't really get to choose your direction or anything like that. Easy to pick up. The other thing I've been playing, Jeremy, you know, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. And if you remember, when Jeremy first talked about it a few shows back, I'd put an hour or two in some local multiplayer, and I walked away a little unimpressed. The trouble, and for me, was that my opponents had put in the better part of a week, and I was pretty much going in cold, so I got my ass handed to me. So I picked up the game before the new year, and let me say that the $39.99 price tag was definitely a big incentive, and logged in a few hours with the PS Vita version, which is a really good port. Spent some time learning a little bit about the reach and the rhythms for a few characters before playing competitively and also cooperatively. Jeremy, I think we played like New Year's Day. And with this kind of the proper approach, I have to admit I'm enjoying the game a little bit more. The one thing is I'm an owner, or I have been an owner, of all of Sony systems, and I really enjoy, you know, kind of seeing the characters come together. There's something really pleasing about that. But naturally, there's a little bit of a disconnect from character lore and character appreciation and their fighting style. And so while I want to be Ratchet and Clank or Sackboy, because I do like those characters, my playstyle in the game kind of pushes me towards Kratos or Colonel Raddick. I'm not saying that the game's unbalanced, and I do think Superbot did a commendable job of kind of leveling the playing field with a pretty, you know, divergent variety of playstyles. But the one thing is, basically, I'm choosing fighters based on technique rather than my own subjective appreciation of a character, and that's not a fault, mind you, more of an observation. So I'm not playing who I really want to be. So that said, I'm really enjoying it, and but also lamenting Sony's handling of it. Typically, when a fighting game's released, even something kind of niche, such as Persona 4 Arena, my friends list reacts accordingly. And when things like Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 or Street Fighter Cross Tekken was released, there were always a couple people playing. With Battle Royale, I have to set up play dates, and which is kind of a shame, because the game is beginner friendly. There are no double quarter circles followed by multiple buttons. Everything is a direction and a button press, even they're equivalent to fatalities. And I think that the character tutorials do a great job of kind of walking you through everyone's arsenal. It could be boring, but they do it in a way where it's fairly quick. They allowed me to notice, to perceive openings, enemy attack animation starters, and kind of get you a respectable start fairly quickly. And as I mentioned before, the PS version is a really good port. So if you have both systems, I recommend a pickup.
Yeah, could it be that
it beat Jeremy once, for the record?
It's true, but I just, in the full disclosure now, Robert, I didn't want to point this out to you because you were gloating a little bit, but we were trying to determine what Parappa's level 3 super attack was, and I thought we were in agreement on this. Like, I wouldn't do anything, I would just try and build it up. So I kept building it up. Robert kept killing me. And then at the end, he's like, "Ah, Jeremy, I beat you." And I'm like, "Well, we got to see Parappa's level 3 super." He's like, "I beat you." So since you're calling me out on air, I think I would just set the record straight there.
I wanted to know if the level 3 had any interaction. It has
Parappa. It does not. Because no, it's just
from good to whatever Parappa's highest level of rappiness.
You rapping cool.
Yeah, there you go. Jeremy, I don't know how you know that.
Because part of the reason I know it is because when I was rapping gifts for Christmas and I was rapping bad, I was like, "You rapping bad," because I was rapping bad.
The rain.
Everybody knows you rapping cool, right?
No.
No.
It's just above good. Whatever is above good.
I want to point out that if you're interested, and I'm sorry, Blue, I know you have a question, but if you are interested in seeing kind of what Robert's describing in terms of the combos and things, that's the neat thing, is that in terms of the attacks are pretty simple, but the combos, I always had this may be stupid of me, but I always had a lot of trouble understanding the idea of, like, make your own combo system. Do you guys remember when that used to be a thing? Like, it was like, oh, make your own combos, and I was like, what's a combo? And I just couldn't understand how you could make your own. And it's basically just a bunch of moves that seem to hit people really rapidly in succession. And there have been, in the Superbot Twitter account retweets these sometimes, but there are people who are out there. There's kind of I don't know, relatively, it's probably not that much, but there's a pretty active community of people who are playing and kind of exploring PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. And they will retweet sometimes some just homemade combo videos that people make. So they'll be like, here's some combos you can do for the Big Daddy, or here's some combos you can do for, you know, Raiden or whatever, and they will, is it Raiden or Raiden? Oh my god, I just...
I think it's Raiden.
Raiden? Raiden? Jack. Raiden. His name is Jack, right? Jack. but Oops. Anyway, yeah, you should check some of those out, because it's pretty interesting to see how with a very simple fighting system, people can come up with, you know, like, hit somebody in the air like this, and then before they hit, you can launch this super and it'll kill them. It's really interesting. It's a combination of really simple attacks with some, you know, a lot of room for opportunity in you know, the way that you attack your opponents.
What I was going to ask was, do you think that the reason why you haven't been seeing, you know, a lot of people on your friends list playing PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale is because it's not the, and I'm going to use air quotation fingers with this, traditional fighting game?
Maybe. I really didn't give it that much thought. To me, most of it, because when I went to purchase it, when it dropped in price, I wondered, oh, you know, usually when things drop in price, it can be a hard time, you know, I can have a difficult time finding it at Best Buy or GameStop, things like that. I went to Best Buy, there were like 20 copies. And I'd have to say Sony really didn't, at least in my opinion, market this the way they should. This was a key, you know, kind of AAA title for them, tentpole title for the holiday season, and I didn't really get that feeling that they were pushing it as such.
Yeah, I didn't really get that feeling either. But, you know, the flip side of it is, it's a lot of fun. And I've said this before, and I, you know, I'm constantly talking to people about this. It's funny what a mindset we get in as video game enthusiasts. Like, oh, you shouldn't have this because it didn't sell very much. Oh, don't go get it. Don't go get it. It's bad. It's not bad. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And with only one exception that I've ever seen ever, and maybe I'm not that well traveled in the circles of people who, you know, but I've only ever seen one person who played it and then said, nah, you know, I don't really like it. Everybody else, even the real skeptical people, has said, you know what, this is really a lot of fun. And
yeah,
it is. And
it
that's
is.
All you need to know about it.
I'm a little bit more lenient towards non-traditional fighters. One of my favorite fighting franchises was the Power Stone series.
Oh, yeah.
Not sure if you guys are on board with that, but in surprise, no one's done kind of a 3D fighter that's similar, pays homage to that. So,
you know, there used to be a real, and I wasn't really plugged, and I'm still not really plugged into the fighting game community, but it seems like even, you know, years ago, there were people who would say, oh, Smash Brothers isn't a real fighting game, you know, like what's the word I'm looking for?
It's like a pseudo fighting game. It's a party brawler.
Yeah, but then there were people who were like, no, it's like totally, and they would say the same. I remember people were talking about wave dashing. Like, what the hell is wave dashing? Oh, well, it's when you do this thing with your shield and you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can probably take just about anything and have a really, like, hardcore community around it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that still plays a role today. I mean, I don't know if, I feel like the fighting game community has come around on that sort of thing, and I don't really see them publicly disdaining Smash Brothers. And like I said, I mean, this particular game has been on, you know, what is it, Wednesday night fights, and they've had, you know, they've had it at tournaments and things like that. So I think people are willing to give anything a chance these days, as long as, you know, there's some level of skill. And I think it's pretty clear that, you know, it's like Robert said, it's easy for beginners to pick up. But if you look at some of these combo videos, you can get pretty far down the rabbit hole too.
I remember having an argument years ago whether Poi Poi was a fighting game. Do you guys remember that one for PS1?
No.
Okay, never mind.
The name sounds familiar, but I don't recall.
Listeners, actually, if you remember Poi Poi, write in.
Poi is a delicious Hawaiian fruit dish.
Yeah, not the taro root. P-O-Y, P-O-Y.
Oh.
But not that good purple stuff that I like. Anyway, last thing I want to touch on was Coda Princess, a game that Sean and Sage and I saw at E3. And considering the game's development pedigree, naturally drew a lot of comparison to the Saturn cult classic Guardian Heroes. And in many ways, the comparison is pretty apt. Both games kind of mix the hack and slash genre with light role-playing elements. Both take place on this three-planed screen, which actually proves to be a little bit unessential. You don't really need all those planes, and I don't use them. I'm usually in the foreground because, you know, the graphics are a little bit bigger and easier to see. You play as the lead character in the game. Her name is Solange. She's a princess who wields a giant sword and sports a barely there metal bikini. You guys with me so far?
Anyway,
yeah. So you hack away at foes. You use light and heavy attacks. And what's new is a few kind of tactical elements. Players can mark an enemy with this attack, and they can which does double damage. And they can also initiate a mode which doubles the strengths of your attack. So for bosses, these two things can be combined, and you can do quadruple damage. Massive damage, as they say in the industry. The one downside is that when the screen is filled and the 3D's on, the game gets a little bit of input lag, and Solange, or you can play as other characters, feels kind of like she's fighting underwater, especially when jumping. You have to hold down the D-pad or circle pad a little bit longer than, you know, what you're probably used to. That and a leap in difficulty near the end of the game, the last few levels are pretty balls tough, are really the only two caveats I have for what I think is an otherwise engaging brawler. And I think much like Guardian Heroes, it is sure to be a 3DS cult classic of its own. So Coda Princess. Metal bikini.
I think I give that a new release pick of the week.
What happened was, it was kind of interesting. Atlas released it, and sometimes when 3DS games come out, they have a very limited number of ROMs that they give out, like less than a dozen. We didn't get one, and then it came out on the eShop, and then Atlas contacted and said, hey, you want to review it? And I said, of course, that's right up my alley. Who doesn't like metal bikinis?
Hey, Xena Warrior Princess was did it pretty well.
Yes.
Is it the metal bikinis or the metal boobs?
Bikinis, because the metal boobs aren't really cool, Jeremy.
Yeah. Metal robot boot. No, robot boots.
Feel like
are
sacks
awesome.
Of sand.
Yeah, well, they might get rusty. Unless they're stainless steel.
Now, you guys, you're just getting me hot and bothered.
You need a better metal amalgams. Jeremy.
Yes, sir.
What have you been playing?
Well, I have been playing a lot of portable games lately. It seems like that's kind of been a theme for me. I've been trying to branch out a little bit, playing some. I've been playing stuff all over, but the only interesting new stuff has been portable. So I have been playing the recently released Stranger's Wrath, Oddworld Stranger's Wrath HD, the Vita port that just came out, Just Add Water, I believe. Just Add Water Limited, Jaw Limited, did that. They actually released it on the PlayStation Network last year? Was it last year?
I think it was the top-selling Vita PSN title, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, well, this one came out just in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I want to say. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
For PS3, it came out last year. And
I think it was the top seller for December.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a remake of the original Xbox game. I believe it was set to come out on PC. That didn't happen until just recently as well. I believe that was released on PC around the same time as the PSN version, and this is my first time ever playing it. I've actually never played any games in the Oddworld series. I have no idea if I'm missing out on important plot points when I play Stranger's Wrath HD, but I'm enjoying it. It's kind of a hybrid first-person and third-person action game.
Mm-hmm.
And
a little bit of stealth.
And like a lot of stealth games of the last-gen era, I find myself in a lot of awkward combat situations with this game. So the context of this game, it's basically kind of like an Old West with like weird alien critter kinds of things. So there's like chicken people, and the bad guys are like these weird slug things. They're not squishy. They're sort of like, how are you guys on your Star Wars lore? Do you know what an Ithorian is? Remember in the Star Wars cantina, there was that thing that looked like the snail head.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's these things and they kind of look like that. They're like these weird misshapen heads, and they all talk like they're hillbillies and they got shotguns. Oh, howdy. And I'm not exactly sure, like I said, maybe this fits some kind of lore that I'm not quite getting. So it's a little weird, but I dig it. I like that part of it. And you play as this character named Stranger, who is kind of a bounty hunter. He's different from anybody else. He's kind of a furry-faced, he kind of looks like something from, like, the Dark Crystal or something like that. He's got kind of, like, this weird furry snout kind of thing. And
if Clint Eastwood was in the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. He looks just like that. And he is a sort of hyper-badass kind of guy. He's got some weird speech issues, though. Everything is voice acted, and it has sort of a little hint system. If you're ever not sure what you're supposed to be doing next, you can hit the square button while you're standing around, and he'll talk to himself like, "I guess I better go down to." He has these weird pauses, and I'm not sure if that's part of it. It's kind of distracting and kind of weird, but again, you know, I'm kind of okay with that. But the way the game plays is you can run around in kind of a third person view as Stranger and explore this. You know, generally it's gulches and, you know, maybe a town here and there. So it's not like it's wide open, but you do have a little bit of space to range around. And you start to learn that the game starts to teach you about your bounty hunting system, where as you fight bad guys, you may hit them with concussive, you know, for example, you can spin around and hit people with your fists, or you can go up and headbutt them and potentially knock them out, where they get up to three little stars that kind of fly around. And then once they're knocked out and unconscious with those stars, you can use some sort of like wrist vacuum thing to, you know, you hold that down, that kind of sucks them up, and you know, and then you've collected that bounty that you eventually redeem later on. You can also attack them with deadly force, where they get little red stars, and as soon as they get three red stars, they die, and they drop some money, and you maybe get less of a bounty on that body if you suck up that dead body. And so as you go through the game, you'll go to your bounty shop, and you have different levels, essentially, that you can do. And you start off only being able to do one or two. Eventually, it branches out, and the story kind of progresses, and you learn a little bit more about Stranger, and he needs some sort of life-saving operation, and he needs 20,000 moolah to get the operation, or else Doc won't do it for him. Like I said, there's kind of a first person element to it. So as you learn your bounty hunting system, you find that your projectile weapons, you have this little crossbow thing, a kind of double-sided crossbow where you point it and you have one type of ammunition on the left, one type of ammunition on the right. And you basically find these little critters, you know, for lack of a better word. There's little, bitey kinds of guys, and there's bees and stink bomb things, and there's, you know, trash talking chipmunks that, you know, you shoot that out and the guys will go like, "I hate those guys," and they'll go out and stomp on them, and that gives you a chance to, you know, do whatever you need to with them. Little spiders that'll wrap guys up in webs so that you can capture them and things like that. But like I said, that for me, the difficulty is, so there's a radar system to this. So it is, like Robert said, it's a stealth sort of game, and you can see on your radar little dots, and they have little cones of vision. And I find myself, I'm flashing back a little bit to the Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 2 specifically, for some reason, it kind of reminds me of, where they seem to have a really good, you know, they have some really good eyesight. Because they'll pick you off from across the level, and they'll be like, "There he is," and suddenly mm-hmm. they're all coming at you, and the combat is not super like competent. Like in the cutscene, you know, like in the very opening cutscene, for example, this dude Stranger, he's like running on all fours and he's like jumping around rocks and like swinging on things and he knocks the guy down. And I'm like, yeah. But with this, it's more like I kind of run around in 360 degrees and, you know, I get stuck on a rock and then I, you know, get killed.
Let me ask you, Jeremy, are you kind of hiding, playing intelligently, like picking out your opponents when they're alone? Kind of playing it like Batman?
A little bit. I mean, you have to see. I think that most of what I'm doing, though, is if I am doing that, because I kind of feel like with all these weapons, I should be a little more competent. The thing is that one of the neat things. So as you're fighting, you do take damage, but you also have a stamina bar. And really, at any point, you can. There's this thing you can do. Yeah, you shake it off, and basically, he just like. And I found that button at first. I'm like, what the hell is he doing? But the things, the projectiles and the weapons that these guys shoot at you, they're like knives and stuff, and they stick in you. So as you're running around, you know, you have like this cleaver stuck in your arm or something like that. So when you shake it off, he like wiggles around and kind of, you know, shakes it all off. And the little bits go flying off and his health recovers and stuff like that. So you're limited in how often you can do that by this other stamina bar. But as you take other actions, and I'm not even sure what makes it fill back up. It might just be the running around and the doing of other things. But you essentially have, it's not like an auto heal sort of thing, like your halos or your you know, resistance or anything like that. But you can really at any point, if you can just get out of danger for a minute, you can shake it off and get your life back. But Stranger is kind of fragile. You know, you take a couple of shotguns. I mean, there's one level in particular that I did a lot where, you know, the bad guys had shotguns.
Yeah.
And you take a couple of hits from a shotgun, and it's like, boom. And it's kind of funny. It's one of those where you die, and, you know, you have this little, you know, it slowly, like, fades to black. And all the guys come over, and they're like, I hope you like dying, because you're dead. And they'll come down, and they'll, like, kick on you and stuff like that. And they, you know, it's because they're kind of like idiots and stuff, all these bad guys. So my recommendation, so if you're looking at Stranger's Wrath, I think you should go into it with the proper last-gen expectations. I was looking at reviews of the original. I didn't want to look at the remake reviews. I kind of wanted to look and see what people thought of it at the time. And they really liked the idea of having, you know, you can mix and match any two kinds of ammunition at any time, which is kind of cool. There is, you know, the stealth element to it. There's kind of a... you know, little bit of a choose your own mission kind of thing to it. So there are a lot of cool things, but and the remake looks really good. You know, on the Vita especially, I didn't really play the PS3 version, although I understand that does have stereo 3D, which you know, is usually an attractive point for me. But I haven't even loaded up my copy on the PS3, and I've had it since last year. But so with this, actually, you know, what's kind of weird that this reminds me of? Did any of you guys play Giant Citizen Kabuto?
No, I didn't.
Where it's kind of like, you know, I wonder, I don't know who the original developer of this was. I wonder if they were European.
No, they were American. It was,
were they American?
It was Lorne Landing.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Lorne Lanning. That's right. It reminds me, it has sort of a British sensibility.
it does. And I think the Oddworld was always kind of very critical of, you know, kind of commercial motifs. It did have that European vibe to it.
Yeah. And this, from what I understand, like I said, I never played any of the previous Oddworld games, but I don't really get the, you know, much of, there's not much of a satire or like, you know, I get the feeling like Stranger's Wrath is really different from, because the other games were puzzle games, right? I mean, they were kind of 2D,
with a fart
sort button. Of like the Lost Vikings.
Fart
kind
button.
Of a, yeah. So they do have some of that. There's
platformers, but they had little puzzles. You would have to communicate, and I think you had different buttons to kind of gesture and do little, you know, little gestures towards other creatures to get what you wanted.
Make them do things.
Yep.
And wasn't there one character who was in like a wheelchair or something like
that? Yeah, I think that was
Munch.
Munch's Odyssey, something like that.
Yeah.
So I know of those games, but I've never really played them. So for Stranger's Wrath. Like I said, I'm going into this first time ever, never played the original, but one of the things that I try and do when I'm playing games like this is I try and really have, I try and put myself back in, you know, last gen mode and to try and keep those expectations. There are still moments of frustration. I didn't play the PSN version, but this has a pretty good checkpoint system. You can actually save at any point, which is nice. So if you're, you know, if you're coming out ahead in a match, you can actually save it, and then if things go sideways, you can always reload it, and it'll take you back to where you were. I've done plenty of that. So from that standpoint, you know, there's really not, other than having to watch these guys come up and stomp you and be like, say hello to death for me, or, you know, whatever, and you kind of have to wait for that thing to fade out. There's really not a lot of real penalty to dying either. But you can find yourself getting stuck in a particular situation, or sometimes you may not realize, you know, how you're supposed to approach a particular boss. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just one of those things where it's kind of like last gen, you know, emergent gameplay where they're like, yep. Well, here's two guys on the top of a building and we're just going to let you do whatever you want. And it kind of works, but it kind of doesn't. So you're just going to have to kind of fudge it.
You're really hitting the nail on the head with that one, because I think it was sold as kind of, you know, you could go at it with brute force, you could go at stealth. But most of the time I found stealth is the way to go. And for some episodes, for some scenarios, there was only one way where I could figure out a way around it. Otherwise, it would, like you had mentioned, put Stranger in too much jeopardy, and he'd be running around, and you know.
You just run around. You're just you're fucked. I mean, it's just like Snake. And you're like, oh god damn it. but if you played it, I get the feeling like, because it got really great reviews. People really look back at this game with real fond memories. Yeah. So from that standpoint, I'd say if you liked it then, I think you'll probably really like it now on the Vita, or most likely, like I said, I can't really vouch for the PSN version, but I'm sure it's really good.
It is.
Same thing, I'm sure.
How was the frame rate on the Vita?
I had no problems. In fact, I haven't found myself thinking about frame rate even once.
Okay.
And it looks really good. I mean, it looks really decent. The touch controls, you double tap to toggle between third person view and first person view. So if you want to, you could play this game totally as a first person. I mean, sort of like a Turok kind of, you know, kind of FPS. You know? I mean, it's right. Really like the bow and arrow experience, and you get to choose your different little weapons and the ammo, the little critters that you can hunt. They're all over the place. So I mean, it's pretty clear when they're like, all right, you're going to need this ammo, because you'll see all these little spiders crawling around. The one thing I found, and I don't know if this is common to all of the versions, or if it's just the Vita version, or if it's the game's always been like this, but you hunt, you have one particular ammo that's unlimited, like this little electro bug, and you use that to basically bop all the rest of the critters to sort of stun them, to pick them up and use them as ammo. And they're cute, you know, they look at you, and sometimes they'll say little things as they're sitting in your crossbow. Hey, I'm going to get paid for this, right? And then you shoot them off. Oh, and then you but the reticle for shooting the guys, like, I can never hit the bugs. I can never hit the critters on my first try. So I will unload a clip of electro bugs. And I might get one if I'm lucky. So I figured out, you know, this electro bug charges up until it's, you know, it's normally used to stun guys. Like, if you can hit a bad guy with a fully charged electro bug, it'll knock him out. But what I found out is if I rapid fire them before they have a chance to charge up, I have a lot better hit ratio. So that's the only thing I've really found that's been kind of a problem. I did buy a pair of binoculars. Stranger can get the, you know, has a little inventory you can go and spend your moolah on and get some things. And they have a sort of, you use the rear touch and you sort of swipe it open. It's a little Goatsy-esque, you know. It's a little Goatsy.
Goatsy-esque.
Yeah, you kind of pull it apart, you know.
Yeah.
Oh god.
I have to admit, I mean, that's what I thought of.
Rear poke.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it's like you take your fingers and you kind of just like pull it apart. Right. But that,
oh,
what
god.
It does is, what it does
put
is
put your hand in the screen.
Yeah, it zooms in. You know, the as you pull your fingers wider apart, the binoculars zoom in further. So that's kind of cool. And you know, the sticks work all right. You know, there is, I think we've talked about this before, the sticks on the Vita, there's not quite as much throw as you get in a full-fledged controller, but I haven't had really too many control issues either. The camera is a little weird. Camera seems to always want to look a little bit more down than I'm really comfortable with, but you know, all in all, I'd say it works really well. There are a lot of varied environments. You go into, you know, sewers you know, fortifications and caves and, you know, towns and things like that. And
canyons.
It's all very Western themed. Hmm?
Canyons.
Yeah, canyons. Lots
what's
of canyons.
The price?
You know, I want to say it's 15, but I don't know if that's right. Let me look that up.
It sounds familiar to me, too. I think that might be it.
I would like for them to do some kind of cross-buy promotion.
Yeah, well, nice. I think part of it was just that it came out so much later. You know, the original one came out, I guess, just in December, you know? No, that was Vita. Vita came out in December. I'm like, oh, geez, it's just December last month. But they didn't really come out concurrently. And, you know, I think they're doing, like we talked last week about...
Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah, Ratchet and Clank. And I believe they are still, if you have that, it will become active on your Vita at a later date when it comes out, from what I understand. So I guess theoretically they could have done something like that with this. They did not. So I guess you might have to decide in terms of Stranger's Wrath if you'd rather have the, you know, the full screen controller experience, or, you know, I found that it works really well on the Vita. Play a few minutes, and like I said, you can save anywhere. So there are no problems with that. And, you know, like I said, as long as you have your last gen goggles on, or if you've had previous experience with Stranger's Wrath, I think that's really the only caveat. I think if you you've never played it before and you have a low tolerance for kind of the last gen, I don't want to call it jank, but the limitations of, mm-hmm. of the platforms, you know, yeah. back then, you may want to just kind of wait or watch some videos or kind of see. But a lot of people really like it, so it's at least got that going for it. But yeah, it's decent on the Vita. So, Stranger's Wrath. The other thing on the Vita that I've been playing is I've kind of also similarly had some mixed opinions on Chrono Vault for the Vita, which just came out recently.
Yeah, I played that for about a good 10 minutes.
Well, let me tell you, I've had a weird trajectory with Chrono Vault. I want to tell you about that because I started out. So Chrono Vault is it's
Monkey Ball.
Yeah, it's got a Monkey Ball Marble Madness kind of, you know, 3D ball rolling.
Kind of meets Bubsy 3D.
In terms of, like, time or?
In terms of crap.
Oh, in terms of crap. Yeah, so.
It's not awful.
No, well, here's the thing. So the idea behind this is you are in this time-traveling orb kind of thing, and they have characters and stuff like that. To me, the weirdest thing about this game, I just want to get it out of the way, the weirdest thing about this is that they decided to attach a narrative to it.
Yeah,
It reminds me a little bit, I'll tell you my opinion of this, is it reminds me of like an indie game that has a good idea, but then they decide that, you know, like I've seen indie games, like do you remember Osmos, where you sort of absorb things that were smaller than you, and you would be absorbed by things that were bigger, so you would just basically, you were this ball just trying to go around a flat surface. Well, I saw some games like that would have story attached to them, and I was thinking, you know, why would you attach a story to a game like that?
Maybe
and
for the time travel motif?
Maybe that's so the thing is that they, you know, the characters are basically just these little 2D paintings that kind of have dialogue sometimes, and they're a little bit, yes, it's like steampunk time travel, and they send you back to like Mayan temples and to China and things like that. So the levels have you know, foliage or, you know, little themey polygons and things, just you know, just little accoutrements here and there that kind of make it feel like, okay, well, I went back to ancient China, so here I am. But you know, it's mostly like I'm chasing Dr. Nefarious, and he's going to get away. We better start that timer. So to me, that's the weirdest thing about it, is that they decided to that they were going to attach some kind of story to this, because I don't think it really needs it. I mean, I don't think it's a bad choice necessarily. Right. It's just kind of weird. It's just like, you know, did you really need to spend the time on that?
Didn't want Super Monkey Ball to have a long drawn out narrative plot line?
Well, can I tell you something? I was watching, actually, I don't have a lot of experience with Monkey Ball either. And okay. I feel like I spent a lot of time talking about games that I haven't played, damn it. And it's true. I try and play as many things as I can, but there's so much out there. I was watching. Did either of you guys watch any of the speed trials they were doing on Good Games Done Fast or Awesome Games Done Quick?
I saw the Japanese version of Super Mario 64.
Yeah, that? And that was I'm trying to remember the speedrunner's name. I watch them sometimes, but speedruns are awesome. It's like mm-hmm. watching a virtuoso musician who's just mastered this thing. and I actually watched Monkey Ball. I watched some guys playing Monkey Ball, and it looked like a lot of fun. Monkey Ball.
It is.
Little, you know, roller coaster things, and then you get into some gears, and the gears take you up this way, and then you can go that way.
I think the difference is Monkey Ball, you're moving the environment, and this one you're moving the ball, though.
Yeah, you're moving the ball. So in this, you have, so far, I've gotten into some, you know, pretty simple up to, like, moderately complicated levels. Mostly, it's just platforms. So you go down a narrow platform, you take a hard left, you know, this thing rises up, there may be a little piston that's kind of pumping up and down, because that's what happens in the Mayan ruins. You know, then you tilt, you know, you can control the camera, again, using the rear touch, which actually, at first, I couldn't figure out how to do it, but I actually just recently... So let me tell you my trajectory with Chrono Vault. So my trajectory was... I started playing it, and the other thing about it is it's Chrono Vault, so aside from the time travel story idea, you can, at any point, if you make a mistake, reverse time. You put your two thumbs down on the front touch screen, and it will spend some of these little chronos that you have collected, and you can reverse time for as many of those as you've collected, basically. And I started out playing that way, and then I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of interesting, and I stopped playing it. And I came back a little later... And I must have forgotten all about that, because then I played through just a dozen levels without that. And I was just like, oh, god damn, like, oh, you know, because any little thing, mm-hmm. they have these other enemy balls that'll come and try and, they basically just bump it, they seek you out, and they just bump you off, and you can't really resist them, they just eventually will force you off. And I was just like, oh, damn, oh, So I'd get really frustrated, and eventually I'd get through, and I'm like, yes, yes, because if you fall off, it basically starts you out back at the beginning, and the timer starts again. And, you know, it's time-based, so you can get stars for completing in a certain period of time, you can get stars if you collect all the little chronovolts, and you get stars for a third thing. I forget what it is. So I played through a lot of these levels just like straight up. Like I wasn't doing anything special, just straight up navigation. The camera, especially in the Mayan levels, they've got, like I said, the trees and stuff like that. And like I turned the camera and like suddenly I can't see anything. And oh, damn it. It was just getting really frustrating. And then suddenly I remembered, like, oh yeah, like I can reverse time again. And So I started out pretty okay on it. Then I was like, oh, my enjoyment level went down. Like, I was like, oh, this is really terrible. Like, I can't. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I got this time element. So I can. And I have to say, after I remembered the main point of the game is to be able to reverse time and do that, I actually found myself having a lot of fun with it again. I mean, it's not perfect, and you still have moments of frustration, you know, and you do have to learn the level, but I don't think that there's anything worse about this than any other. Like, all of us, listeners, let's all just be honest with ourselves. Was Marble Madness really that fun? Did we really?
No.
No.
No, it was really frustrating.
No, we didn't. And so I can't say
anything. I think it was that fourth level where there's a little sink, and there are enemy marbles where you have to cross it, and start getting those really thin paths where it got frustrating.
Even Monkey Ball is good when you're doing good at it, but Monkey Ball had, you know, you sometimes
had the mini games to fall back on as well.
Yeah, like
Monkey Target was amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. So Monkey Ball, even just watching people do the speed runs, I'm like, oh, that looks really cool. But of course, these guys, they make it look easy. So I can't say anything worse about Chronovolt than anything about any other marble platforming rolling game ever. But the time element, once I remembered that I had the ability to fix my mistakes, I was like, oh, you know, that's actually really kind of cool. I kind of like this again. So my trajectory now has gone back up, and I've actually started enjoying Chronovolt. And in case you didn't already know, Chronovolt is free for PlayStation Plus users. I believe free from its initial launch, which was just a week or two ago, I believe. And so if by the time of this recording it's still available, you have no excuse not to check it out. Chronovolt on the Vita. Comments, questions, smart remarks?
Can I just say that for get the ball in the navigate the environment labyrinth, I'm a fan of either On the Ball or sometimes it's called Camel Tree, the 2D version by Taito. You guys ever play that?
No.
Okay. Was it on one of the Taito collections?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Oh, then I'll have to check it out.
It was one of the last. It's on the PSP 1 and the PS2. It's a 2D one, and you control the environment much like Monkey Ball, and it has a lot of power ups on the screen. It has, you know, things to avoid, spikes. It plays a lot like the bonus level from the first Sonic the Hedgehog, if you guys remember that.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Right. So that's Camel Tree, aka On the Ball, when it was brought out for the SNES.
Very cool.
That's one to grow on. Boys and girls.
So a couple last things. Let me just get a few little mini bites out of the way here. So I have been introduced to Hero Academy, the, I guess, longtime favorite of everybody everywhere. It's on. No, what was it? You going to say something? No?
No.
Don't like? Do not want?
I have not played.
Have not played it. So Hero Academy is a very simple sort of wizard's chess Archon kind of strategy game. I guess you could compare it a little bit to Advance Wars somewhat. You have limited space, you know, so it's not like Advance Wars where you have really big maps. You have a grid of, you know, probably 30 by 10, you know, grid, and there are special spaces that you can get on that will give your characters bonuses. And you get different little kinds of groups of heroes. So you have your traditional sort of sword and sorcery heroes, you have goblin characters, you have, Taoism kind of like you know, kung fu artists. You have if you get the PC version, you can get the Team Fortress characters, and so it's not like there's a particular. It's basically just like you get to choose your kinds of team, and the different characters roughly equate to each other, but they might have some special little abilities. All the heroes have hit points, you know, 800, 1,000 hit points, something like that. Attacks are 200 to 300 hit points apiece. Some characters have range, you know, archers, magic users, chain lightning, things like that. And then as you're doing that, you also have a rotating, almost like a hand, like a deck of cards down at the bottom of different, either more characters you can place on the board, or, you know, armor or weapons that you can equip onto your guys to give them little health boosts or attack boosts, magic scrolls to cast different spells depending on the kind of team that you're on, or health potions, I think, is the other one. So you can either revive players that are down or heal somebody who's really hurt. And the goal is to either kill all of the other team or to destroy their crystals. You might have two or three crystals on either end of the board, and the crystals have a lot of hit points, and you go through and either try and kill all of the bad guys or kill all the crystals. That you have a range of movements in squares and grids, just like you might have in Advance Wars, and basically you have five moves that you can do every turn, and it's asynchronous, and it's cross platform. So if you're playing on PC, which I think the only version that's available is Steam. I don't know if you can get for PC on any other platform. If you know somebody who's playing it on an Apple iOS device, you basically just pass your turns back and forth, play whenever you want to, have multiple games running with multiple opponents, and basically if you're losing, just never take your turn, and that way you never have to suffer defeat. at least that's been my strategy. Yeah, no, but pretty neat, and you know, as long as you don't, I find myself being a little intimidated because everybody's been playing it for months, but I think once you learn the rules, I think even the, you know, the real hardened players will probably, you know, they'll admit that you could get, you know, some of it's in the luck of the draw, so you have a pretty good chance of potentially, as long as you understand the basic rules, you have a potential chance in Hero Academy of beating somebody who has maybe been playing longer than you have. Pretty inexpensive. I don't know what the price is on iOS. It's probably not more than a couple of bucks. I think it's $5 on Steam, and you get the Team Fortress characters, and like I said, cross-platform, so play with your friends. So that's Hero Academy. A couple of other things, minor mentions. PlayStation Mobile, also on the Vita, I don't know that it's gotten a lot of coverage. I, you might remember, am a big proponent of the PlayStation Minis platform. Lots of good stuff in Minis. Lots of good stuff in Xbox indie games. But the what is the name of the phone? The Xperia Play supports PlayStation titles through the PlayStation Mobile initiative. Same thing on the Vita, and I've been playing a few games from the PlayStation Mobile. In fact, it's got a separate little tab on the Vita store. You can just go in specifically through mobile games. Cheap little experiences, the same kinds of things that you might find in an iOS store or in a Google Play store. I've been playing Lemmings, which is, at the time, it was free, but I don't know if that was a promotion. If you have a Vita, go take a quick search for Lemmings. If it costs money, I'm sorry. If it's free, hey, get it. It's free. It's Lemmings just the way that you'd always expect it. It's not the same. I sort of expected it to be the very, very old school, like PC, EGA graphics Lemmings. Mm-hmm. It is not. It's the same idea. New kinds of levels. Good music. Just generally fun to look at and to play. The gameplay, as you know, is little Lemmings. You give them little abilities as they march sort of indomitably toward whatever their fate may be, whether it's to the end goal where they will be happy forever, or you might tip them into a lake of lava. But you give little abilities, like the ability to stop traffic and send lemmings in the other direction, stack up little stairs, dig through things, just lots of little puzzles, a lot of good fun. Lemmings, if you've never played it, go play Lemmings. Also, I'm not sure if this is PlayStation Mobile, and I didn't put this on the outline, but I did play a little bit of I'm just now blanking on it, the Endless Runner from Half Brick.
Jetpack
Joyride, which I believe is free
for
maybe forever
Vita and PSP. Yes,
and it's not even PS Plus. It's just they just threw it out there, from what I can tell. So, I kind of with this again to try to keep this short, but it's pretty straightforward. It's an endless runner, and I guess it's kind of like the endless running game. I mean, it's kind of the one that everybody knows. It actually stars Barry Steak Fries. If anyone knows Barry,
from Age of
Zombies.
Age of Zombies, yes.
Is pretty fun. In fact, another quick little hit on that, I wanted to give a shout out to One Epic Game, which was on PlayStation Store PS Mini's sale recently. Got that for $90. It is also an endless runner, and it reminds me very much of the style of Half Brick. Very tongue-in-cheek, very self-aware.
You paid $90 for it?
I was thinking the same thing.
Did I say $90?
Yes, you did.
Sorry, $1.99.
I thought it was one of those premium, those apps.
Yeah, all
like $10,000.
Bought all the content. Jetpack Joyride, Endless Runner, gather coins, get lots of different jetpacks. I don't find myself getting very far. Kind of frustrating. Eventually, you can pull on the one-armed bandit and hopefully get some bonuses. You get coins. The one-armed bandit.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
What do you call that? Slot machine?
Yes.
You put some money in the slot machine, get some stuff. It's all right for what it is. You didn't pay any money for it. Maybe I value it less because of that, but Jetpack Joyride. One Epic Game, pretty good, 99 cents. $99 if you buy 10 of them. So then the last two that I really wanted to talk about really fast in the same PS Mobile, Beats Sliders, which is from Future Labs, the people who brought us... Someone help me. Future Labs.
the little hamburgers.
Velocity.
In the $180 headphones?
Yeah. No. Well, this studio did Velocity, which, by the way, is getting a full Vita port, Vita remake. It's a really great game. We've talked about it. Go find that old show where we talked about it. It's really good. I think I described it at the time is a top-down shooter for people who don't like top-down shooters. But they made a game called Beat Slider, which is actually the reason I wanted to bring it up is because I figured out that it is actually it's in the Beats series. Do you guys remember the PSP game that was?
Yes, I covered that. That was one of the first reviews ever.
PSP. And I will tell you, I play that game. I keep it on my PSP and I need to see if I can load it on my Vita, but I play it every time I go on an airplane trip. I don't know what it is about it. I've made this little...
You can, what is that? Has a visualization component where you can bring in your own songs.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think that's...
That never worked.
I think it works pretty good. It depends on the music that you're putting on it, but as long, like electronic, I listen to a lot of electronic kind of music on it, something with a heavy beat, and it's off a little bit, but it's got one of those things where, like, if you ever played, like Elite Beat Agents, mm-hmm. I found on Elite Beat Agents that the easier levels I had a little bit of a harder time to keep up with the easy levels on Elite Beat Agents.
You mean slower, the slower tempo?
Well, kind of, but I also mean the easier levels, because the thing was that the harder levels were more filled with stuff to do, so I found myself like being able to keep up with the rhythm a lot more by the tap-tap-ta-tap-tap slide. Yeah. Whereas with the other ones, it was kind of harder to sort of keep on, like, okay, what beat am I on here? The same thing I found in Beats, and I know I'm going all over the place here, but Beats, the original for PSP, I found it works really well on the harder difficulties, and you sort of figure out, oh yeah, it really is, getting on this beat. It's not perfect. Every once in a while, it'll hitch up, but Beat Slider is the the reason they call it Slider or Sliders, Beat Slider, is that it's basically like if you've ever played one of those tile puzzle games where you have a picture of a cute panda bear or something like that, and you have to slide it around to put all the pieces, the 9 or 10 or 12 pieces into a picture. Same kind of thing, except they combine it with
hentai.
Yes. So tentacles will...
Best indie game ever.
No, but they actually do it with like little MIDI synthesizers and things like that. So you actually start to... music depending on where you slot these things in, and I've actually found it's kind of neat. They sort of will give you bonuses if you do the top row or the far left row, and I've actually found myself doing really well. Those sliding puzzles, I kind of hit or miss. I'll get halfway through and the panda will look like a mongoloid panda, so I'll kind of give up. But on this, it's actually done really well. I believe it is pretty inexpensive, 50 cents, maybe a dollar on PlayStation Mobile. They also have another game called Fuel Taracus, which is you're fueling the planet Taracus. It's kind of a combination, very simple. I'm pretty sure this one is 50 cents. It's kind of like Simon, except you also, as you're doing Simon, you can choose different little fuel containers to be powering up. And I mostly just wanted to talk about this because I don't think PlayStation Mobile gets a lot of coverage. And
no.
Yeah, I wanted to point out the fact that just maybe go browse around through the PlayStation Store.
Jeremy, I have a confession.
What's that?
I've never been there. I've never seen it. PlayStation Mobile.
Go take a look. I mean, the thing is, it's just
how do you get there?
I think it's like along the top bar of the PSN.
Yeah, well, I said before, so it's a separate little tab that you can do it.
Okay.
Top.
Okay.
But I never even noticed. Bothered it. With it because I figured, man, this shit's not going to work on the Vita. Why do I even have it here?
In fact, it works just fine. You have one little, I think there's some kind of little compatibility pack that you install the first time that you download one. Right. But if you're going to be buying stupid shit on your iPhone or something,
right,
take a look at the stupid shit on the PlayStation Store and maybe support that a little bit. But
do you hear there's a version of Defender with cats?
Heard that.
You heard that? Okay.
No, but yes. Am I supposed to have heard that?
I don't know. Sounds cool.
So, PS Mobile Games, Lemmings, Beat Slider, Field Taracus, and then check out Jump Fuel, Jets, Jetpack Joyride, Field Taracus, Jetpack Joyride. Just go play some games, everyone. Just
portable play some games. Yeah.
Buy a Vita.
Buy a Vita.
And you know what works really well on the PS Vita? Or at least surprisingly well.
What's that?
It's Earth Defense Force 2017 Portable.
I have a question before you get started. 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
4 years away.
Yeah. Like, why would they choose 2017?
Well, basically, I think it's... I'm trying to remember if it was this year that we're going to detect alien rays from, or alien broadcasting signals from deep in outer space. And then we form the Earth Defense Force in a couple of years, just in case that the aliens on the other end of those radio waves is hostile. And there of course they are. And they show up in the year 2017.
We can't even raise the budget limit. What are we going to fund this?
Can I offer a alternative scenario? The original 2017 came out in 2006 here in the U.S., probably even earlier in Japan. So they figured 10 years, that would be plenty of leeway.
There's
for
a chance
them.
For a giant bug invasion.
And now it's almost here.
I mean, they should have done like a 20XX.
Yes, I was just going to say that. Thank you. That is very smart.
And basically, I mean, now if you played the original Earth Defense Force, what's new for the Vita is basically you're going to have 7 new missions, a decent amount of new weapons for both Storm 1, which is the standard soldier, and weapons for the Pale Wing, which is the new playable character that is unlockable after you finish an entire playthrough of the game on any difficulty level, but still you have to play through the game again to unlock the Pale Wing. And I mean it's not that big of a deal, but
I heard the physics are different, like the bugs they bounce around a lot more now.
Now before you describe the bug physics, tell me about the I think I know what this game is like, but can you describe what the experience of actually playing Earth Defense Force 2017 Portable is like?
Well, basically, I mean, originally the series started out as a part of a line of games in Japan called the Simple 2000 series. And these are not the most polished games in the world. They are more fun than flashy. And basically with Earth Defense Force, you pick out 2 weapons, which usually can be, assault rifle and a shotgun, or a turret and a rocket launcher and stuff like that. Whatever fits with the mission you're going to play. Weapon selection is pretty important, because in some stages there will be like a UFO, and if it's hanging up in the air a little too far, the weapon you're using may not reach up there, and you will be stuck completely shit out of luck and have to quit the mission. So yeah, weapon selection is very important with that.
this is a third person kind of close in behind the shoulder shooting kind of game, right?
Yeah, it's basically from behind, but
that's not funny, Robert.
Sorry.
Basically, you pick 2 weapons, you pick a stage, and the only objective for the stage you're playing, it doesn't matter which one you choose, it's basically shoot everything that moves that isn't an EDF soldier. You don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about rescue missions or stealth missions or protect missions or escort missions or whatever. It's basically there are giant bugs. shoot them.
So there are other soldiers, though. Can you command them? Can you tell them what to do?
Yeah, basically, certain soldiers will have, like, a yellow arrow over their head. Usually, it's the commanding officer for, like, a group of soldiers. But if that guy has gotten taken out during, you know, a spider assault, you'll see, like, individual arrows over the heads of the soldiers that are available to command. And you have to gather each one up, and you can have a small army. I mean, I was playing, I think it was one of the, like, mid-level missions, or, you know, mid-game missions, maybe like in the 20s or the 30s. And I was probably commanding about a dozen or so EDF soldiers at the same time. And earlier on in the game, that's definitely helpful because, you know, you don't have a lot of armor, you don't usually have the greatest weapons, so having a bunch of soldiers to watch your back is really important. Now, I haven't gone through on, like, Hard or Inferno or one of the higher difficulty level things, but with the original EDF, once you got up to the higher levels, they were pretty much just cannon fodder. They really did not do much of anything, and they got their asses kicked pretty damned quickly. So you
can't really upgrade them?
You can't upgrade the soldiers, you can upgrade main playable characters in both Storm 1 and Pale Wing, who is the mini skirt wearing jetpack player.
Well, those
who
go
was
together.
From Earth Defense Force, or I think it was, excuse me, Global Defense Force over in Europe, and Earth Defense Force 2 over in Japan. We never got it over here in the States. And one thing that actually kind of annoyed me about the Pale Wing is, like, immediately after you unlock her, basically the message says, the Pale Wing does not exist in the world of 2017. You can play as her in a what-if scenario. It's like, why couldn't they have just reworked some of the dialogue or just muted the dialogue or something that at least make it seem like she fits in somewhere? She's in that universe somewhere. Now, perhaps I'm just getting a little too, like, obsessed with canon, but, but, you know, I mean, it would have been nice if they at least worked in a way to make her an actual part of the universe. And, you know, I will say there is another problem with the canon as well, and this is one of the problems with the new missions, is that in the, I think it was one of the 30-something missions, The radio chatter indicates that the giant spherical mothership is over in Europe and beating the crap out of the European EDF soldiers. And then in the first new mission, if I'm correct, here comes the mothership back over Tokyo, and she's launching a whole bunch of the new attacker class aerial fighters. And then in the next mission, the mothership is back over in Europe and pretty much dominating the EDF soldiers over there. So it's like, why would the mothership fly, you know, partway across the globe just to launch one wave of attackers, then fly back across over the globe over to Europe to resume pounding the crap out of the soldiers over there?
Are you sure it's the same mothership?
As far as I know, there's only one.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a continuity error there. And it's hard to believe I'm seriously taking continuity error.
They're just zipping around like Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask another question about this. So is this more of a, is it a squad commanding game, or is that like a secondary part of it? Or is it like just upgrade your guns, or what is the hook here?
Well, basically it you can control, you know, some squads, you know, gather some of the soldiers around, and they can watch your back, but that's a relatively minor part of the game. You are primarily on your own. You've got to get the best weapons possible through, you know, randomly generated loot drops. You have to,
so it's a loot game.
Yeah, it's a very heavy loot game. It's
with alien bugs.
Yes.
I like that.
And giant robots and monsters, I think, are about half the size of the original Godzilla.
yeah, that's right. The giants in this. I forgot. There's, like, big, big bad guys.
Yeah, and that's one thing. You know, that actually leads into another problem that I have with 2017 Portable is that because it's on the Vita's smaller screen, the game's lost a lot of the impressive sense of scale. It's like when you're playing the original EDF on like a, you know, a TV, an HDTV or whatever, it's like when like the King Spiders or like those giant monsters called Velox or Dino Mechs or whatever you wish to refer to them as, you know, it's like they are huge compared to this, you know, 6-foot soldier. And on the Vita, that really does not translate over quite as well. It's like the King Spiders are supposed to be, you know, as big as of like a football field or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And they just do not seem quite as impressive. It feels closer to...
Do you think that's a limitation of scale? Because otherwise your fellow allies would be a couple of pixels high.
It could be. I mean, yeah. It's a possibility. I mean, the game has gotten, you know, a downgrade. The ants. I mean, let's face it. EDF never looked that great to begin with.
Oh no.
But the ants, they look
like they're made of 8 polygons.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like that, and the textures on them don't look that impressive. They look kind of bland and maybe a little bit blurry.
How do they compare to the ants in Mario Paint?
EDF by a hair.
Yeah.
So let me ask a question. So more maybe more important than the polygons. How's the frame rate? Is it smooth?
Because if
something like that is smooth, you can forgive a lot when it comes to.
Well, you know, I mean, it's. I will say that with the original 2017, when like the queen ant, the giant ant, would spray her acid, I guess is the best way to put it. It's like kind of like acid piss or whatever.
Reproductive juices.
Something like that. In the original EDF, it's like if you got caught. Like really close to that
in the stream.
Yes. It's like the frame rate would probably dip. I want to say it was like not much more than like 5 to 10 frames a second. It would just crawl.
But would it kick in some smooth saxophone?
but with 2017 Portable, it's that I haven't noticed that problem to anywhere near that severity.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
The frame rate does dip from time to time. There is a lot of, you know, action going on screen. There is probably about, I'd say at least 4 dozen enemies on screen at some points in the game, if not more. And you know, sometimes the frame rate will dip a bit, but it does seem to stay pretty solid for the most part. When bugs are like dropping down or flying in the background, they will kind of have like a flipbook stutter to them. They don't have they don't run at quite the same frame rate as the enemies that are closer to the camera. So that kind of takes you a little out of the experience, but by and large, I mean, it's the game runs very well. It's just it just does not look quite as impressive as it does on home consoles.
So should we talk to Mike Goslin from Rebel Entertainment? Hello, Robert here. Today, joining me is Mike Goslin, General Manager, Rebel Entertainment. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks.
And one thing I'd like to do is start off with Rebel's creation. The team is a solid pedigree. You've got employees from EA, Disney, Insomniac, and Atari. I was wondering if you could discuss the formation of Rebel, as well as some of your company's inspirations as creators of interactive entertainment.
Sure. So, yeah, we have people from all across the game industry, and kind of a core of us were at Disney a long time back, and we just really are excited about making really good games, but we're innovators, and so we were drawn to Facebook social platform as a way to kind of do something new, take a fun, maybe more traditional type of game and make it social rather than build a traditional social game. So our kind of goal was to use our kind of diverse background in different kinds of games, but mostly online multiplayer games, and try and bring that to the social networks and see what happened.
Sure. Now, being that Rebel, you guys are situated in the enchanting town of Burbank, same city as Disney and Insomniac, are there any after hours? Well, I guess I should add platonic relationships between your team and the other local studios?
Yeah, there's a little bit of crossover. I mean, we're all friends, so
sure,
still hang out. And it's good to kind of swap war stories, too. I mean, frankly, I learned just as much from having kind of sidebar conversations with people as I do from doing the work a lot of times. So a lot of these things are really hard won bits of information, but they're really easy to communicate. And so a lot of us, have a sort of a policy of sharing, and, I tend to benefit, I think, as much from that as I do from, actually putting the time in development.
Cool. Now, Rebel is part of the IAC family, which is a internet powerhouse. They're behind Vimeo, College Humor, Retro Gamer, Match.com, Ask, Dictionary.com. Now, can you explain how your studio fits in with the rest of the IAC family?
So, yeah, we're really the game company for IAC right now. Mm-hmm. They've done a couple things in the past that are sort of along those lines, but nothing that really got a lot of traction. So we're their latest attempt to try and establish a premium game company.
Sure.
We were sort of brought together from a startup, and when we joined IAC, we decided we would sort of take this on as our mission. So we formed the Rebel Entertainment, and with their backing have sort of launched one game and have a few more things in the pipeline. So we're going to try and make a go at it.
Now, I know College Humor, they often parody Street Fighter II, which happens to be playable on Retro Gamer. Is there any push towards synergy between the various arms at IAC?
There definitely is when it makes sense. They are pretty good about not imposing it as a sort of mandatory thing, but if it makes sense, they encourage it, and everybody's been really helpful. So it's kind of a nice, it's sort of left to you how much you want to pursue it, but I've gotten really good responses so far from everyone. So it's been a helpful thing to have.
Very cool. Let's talk a little bit about your inaugural release, Dungeon Rampage, which launched on Facebook, Kongregate, and also a dedicated site last September. Now, most Facebook games so far, at least most of the ones I've played, have been turn-based, and Dungeon Rampage is more of an action game, and I want to know how difficult it was to accomplish that.
Well, it was kind of easy from the standpoint of it's a pretty tried and true gameplay. We were inspired by games like Gauntlet and other similar
Bit of Diablo in there.
Yeah, Diablo. I mean, we love all those games. So that part wasn't too bad. Doing it in Flash is not the easiest thing in the world. I think we've managed to push Flash beyond its limits in a few ways. But we wanted to do that to make it really accessible, and we knew if we were going to try and go out on Facebook with it, being on Flash was the way to go. We've tried going out with a 3D game on Facebook, and it's harder to get virals, frankly, because of the install
time.
But other than that, the other hard part about it is because our game is really synchronous multiplayer, it's true multiplayer, there's a lot of server-side work that you have to do that's atypical for a social game because they're, as you mentioned, all asynchronous. They don't really have to have real-time support, real-time connections between players. So that was the challenging part. But good news is we've done it a few times before. I've got some server people with me from the old days doing massively multiplayer games, so we could handle high-volume, persistent kind of multiplayer action.
What was the size of your dev team?
Through most of the project, it's been kind of in the low teens. We've grown the team a little bit now because we're working on new stuff, but I tried to keep it small. We didn't want to get into, huge teams, huge product cycles. We thought it was good to be able to move fast and be nimble.
Right. Now, I'm curious as to what medium has performed better for you, Facebook, Kongregate, or your own site?
Well, we went out on Facebook first, and because we've been there the longest, we've sort of had the most time there. I would say that's performing the best in terms of mm-hmm. you know, generating revenue for our company. In terms of the metrics, we get pretty good metrics on Kongregate, and our website has awesome metrics, but we haven't really scaled either of those too much yet because they're still somewhat early.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the long run, they'll probably perform better on a per-user basis. The question is, can we get the kind of scale that we got on Facebook? Mm-hmm. You know, we're approaching, I think we've got 7 million players so far, and, you know, so it's a much bigger audience. So I don't know if the metrics will hold up at that kind of volume, but
sure.
So far so good. Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons behind my query is that a few forecasts have showed that Facebook gaming is kind of on its way out and it's moving towards the mobile market. And I wonder if there were any plans to port Dungeon Rampage to iOS or Android systems.
Yeah, we'd love to. I think one of the things that has made us cautious in that regard is, we want to not diminish the experience. I mean, it's a really fun game right now, but it's multiplayer, it's action. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of cases of that working excellently on mobile yet, although there's starting to be a few now. We're starting mm-hmm. to see some things come out that are pretty cool, that are similar. At the time when we first started, it was a little early for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We would definitely like to do it. I think it would play well. We've actually run the game on Android, and it looks nice. We'd mm-hmm. have to make some, you know, UI adjustments. And
yeah.
That. But it should work pretty well. And I want to be there because I think you're right. The audience is moving there, and it's mm-hmm. it's a casual game. You can get in and out quickly. I think it would appeal to the audience there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we want to. We're not ready to announce anything yet, but we're
sure.
to look seriously at it.
Okay, cool. Now, since the game's launch on Facebook, there was a bit of retuning to the, to the monetization. What can you tell us about some of these tweaks and perhaps some tweaks to the gameplay itself?
Well, so as you know, you learn a lot after you mm-hmm. launch, and we tried to get to launches as early as we could, especially on the monetization, because it was quite different from games that we had built in the past. This is also a little bit different audience from the typical Facebook audience, so there wasn't a lot of reference material to look at to see what was going to work
mm-hmm.
from a monetization standpoint. So we took our best bet and went out with it. Initially, our focus was on selling heroes. So you can pick one of, I think we have now 7 or 8 heroes in the game that you can choose from. And they each play differently. You know, you've got mm-hmm. ranged characters or tanks and stuff like that. And that was our initial focus. And then we also had an energy system because that was sort of typical at the time. And when we launched, the energy system just wasn't working for us. Our players didn't like it that much, and it was cutting down on their playtime. And we really didn't feel like we wanted to restrict playtime. It's a fun game, and the more you play, the more you want to play. So
mm-hmm.
we have such a – it's deep. There's a lot of content. So we weren't really worried about people burning out on it. So we took that out, and we also decided to introduce something more around the items in the game and push the sort of the focus into the dungeon. So we introduced a chest system. So you can find chests in the dungeons, different – levels of chests, and you have to, for some of them, you have to buy keys or earn keys to open them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of been our big change, is trying to shift the in-game retailing to be focused around the chests rather than the heroes. We still do sell heroes, but we made them available for our earned currency also, so that people can earn them if they want to.
Cool. Now before we go, can you share what's next for Rebel?
Well, we've got another game that's in the works right now. I can't tell you too much about it, but it definitely mm-hmm. has a mobile component to it. And we also have big plans for Dungeon Rampage. So stay tuned for new heroes. And we've got some really cool stuff for the players that have been with us for a while. They've got a lot of people that are kind of pretty far along in the game. We want to give some really awesome kind of in-game challenges, and that'll be coming out soon, too.
Very cool. So lastly, if listeners want to fight the Minotaur, as well as dozens of other enemies, where can they go to play Dungeon Rampage?
DungeonRampage.com, or you can search for it on Facebook. But we have links to the Facebook and website at DungeonRampage.com.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show, Mike.
Thank you.
You guys ready for some trivia?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
In honor of this week's release of the Devil May Cry reboot, it's time for some trivia that's bound to make your eyes tear up. So grab your Kleenex and get ready. No, not for that, guys. Gosh.
Okay, I'll toss the box away.
Number one, while we all know that Ninja Theory is behind the most recent DMC iteration, you may not know the studio's old moniker before it was purchased by Jez San in 2004. What were the lads from Cambridge known as during the Kung Fu Chaos era?
Oh.
A, Monsters Among Us. B, Just Add Monsters. C, Just Add Water. Or D, Human Head Design.
I had no idea that Jez San had anything to do with those guys.
Yes.
I find that very interesting.
Do you ever play Star Glider?
Yeah, in fact, actually, there was some trivia about that a few months ago, wow. Maybe a year ago. Actually, one of the most interesting talks... Yeah, I actually sent in some trivia.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember about Jez San. I actually heard... it's John Dean, who works at EA now, actually used to work with Jez San. He, back in the day when they were doing the Conix multi-system, he tells a really interesting story about how they developed Star Fox and how Jez was involved in that. It was super interesting.
Chip.
Anyway, I say Human Head.
Yeah.
I'm torn between... I want to say it's Just Add Water. That name kind of sounds familiar to me.
We were just talking about them earlier today, yeah. Because, I mean, I guess I was thinking that Human Head, I was guessing that because it's an actual studio, but I guess Just Add Water is an actual studio too, so my logic may be flawed.
I guess we'll agree to disagree, and I'm probably going to end up regretting this.
Say Just Add Monsters, because that would be the second one, I guess.
I'm going to stick with Just Add Water. Just Add Water.
Correct answer. Just Add Monsters.
Ah, fucking
should have guessed that. I know.
Jeremy, we were talking to the Ninja Theory guys on Twitter.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
And I mentioned Kung Fu Chaos, so I thought you would get this. This would be a shoe-in, but then you said, no, don't like Xbox.
Oh. No,
I said I don't have an Xbox.
I think you
said
you
can get
and I said Xbox. So I guess it left it a little bit in open to interpretation. So I guess I know where I stand among popular opinion. Jeremy hates Xbox.
He does. He does.
No, I hate Xbox.
Seriously, man, you need to get a cheap one. I mean, they aren't that hard to come by, and they're probably about like $50 or thereabouts, and you get that really badass controller.
Yeah, and all you need is the spare bedroom to fit it all.
Yeah.
That's big.
Good God, yeah.
Number two, the 2001 game that we all know as the original Devil May Cry originally started life as something much different. Name the original intention. A, Resident Evil 4. B, Parasite Eve 3. C, Onimusha Warlords. Or D, Lost Planet.
Okay, now this one I think I can get. Because if I recall correctly, the original Devil May Cry started out as a Resident Evil game. And some of the presentation elements were similar to Resident Evil as well, if I recall correctly. So I'm going to go with the zombie brain chainsaw eating thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. You said the Resident Evil 4, right? Because I think it was going to be an early Resident Evil 4?
I said Resident Evil 4, yes. I was
okay, yeah, you're right. Okay.
You guys know the original title?
Oh.
It was Devil May Care. And the correct answer was Resident Evil 4.
Evil.
Number three.
What are you buying?
Obviously, carrying around pistols named Ebony and Ivory have opened a few doors of opportunity. Name the game that sidearm-toting Dante hasn't had a cameo in. A, Beautiful Joe. B, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. C, Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne. Or D, We Love Golf.
I think I remember We Love Golf having a Dante costume. Which is amazing because I didn't play it, but I think I remember a news story about it.
Shin Megami Tensei, or there was one right before that?
Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom.
See, I want to say that what you're doing is pulling a fast one here because it's Virgil in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom or something like that.
Well,
like
you know... Actually, Dante is in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom because I actually picked it up for the Vita about a week or two ago. So you're, yeah, that one's. Like,
well, I have it listen too. To and the I, man. Yeah. Okay. Well, then I guess while we're coming clean here, he definitely is in Beautiful Joe. Yes. If he's got a costume in that other game, I guess that counts. It kind of seems like it would be kind of funny because he's a demon, right? So he would be in Shin Megami Tensei, but that we've kind of eliminated everything else, right?
It's yeah. I mean, I don't remember the cameo with Beautiful Joe, but I also know that, you know, Shin Megami Tensei is an Atlus title, so it probably would be rather unlikely that Nante would show up there.
Yeah. All right.
Although it does seem kind of it does seem kind of obvious. Oh well, let's. Shin Megami Tensei.
The game Dante wasn't in, We Love Golf.
What?
Yes.
I thought he had a costume in one of those games.
No, no.
Oh, hell.
Okay, number four, time to cry for real. Like many series, Devil May Cry has a scattered timeline. Place the first four games in chronological order for me.
And we're going to die.
You can omit the recent reboot.
Yes!
So forget about DMC. So 1, 2, 3, and 4, put them in order.
I think the third one was first?
We'll see.
That is correct.
Yeah, so I'm going to say 3, 2... No?
No.
3, 1, 2, 4.
Very close. 3, really? 1, 4, and 2.
Devil really, May Cry 2 was the
last one, yes.
I had no idea.
Yes.
Why do games do so much of that? Metroid does that, Legend of Zelda's all over the place.
Probably because the designers, they don't plan on...
They're like, hey, we haven't got anything over in this part of the timeline, let's do this. Let's
jump all the way back, yes.
Stupid.
Okay, in Dante's Divine Comedy, Dante and Virgil happen upon a certain beast on the third level of hell. Dante encounters the same monstrosity in the end of Mission 3 in Devil May Cry 3. Name it. Is it A, Cerberus, B, Minotaur, C, Harpy, or D, the Centaur?
Did you say Cerberus Alpha? Is that a Mischief Maker's mantra?
No, just the Cerberus.
Or
the beta.
I'm going to make a confession here. Now, it's been several years since I tried.
Yes.
I don't recall that I ever got past the first act of Devil May Cry 3. And shame.
Fine comedy. That might help.
Can I tell you that I know the answer to this, but it's not because I actually got to that part in Devil May Cry. It's because I've read like three different versions of the Inferno part of the Divine Comedy.
Yes.
And, you know, I find some very interesting things. The most interesting, I've read different translations of it from the Italian, and it's very interesting to see which translations name the demons different things. Some of them name them, like, direct literal translation. Like, I'm a demon named Crazy Claws, and I'm a demon named, you know. And it's just, I find it very interesting. So I've actually read, like, three different versions of Inferno. And the third circle is Gluttony.
Mm-hmm.
And Cerberus is on the third level because he eats things with his three mouths.
I'll agree with that.
You know, Jeremy, I did a little bit of research.
You're actually wrong.
All these monsters are in the Divine Comedy, but you are correct. It was the Cerberus. Good job. Good job.
You really had to ride my coattails with that question, didn't you, Jeremy?
Did you ever play Devil May Cry 3?
Well, actually...
An egghead and reading the Divine Comedy?
I am a little bit of an egghead, but... I have it in the shrink wrap on my shelf. I have the 5th anniversary collection. I played the first one, and I got past that spider. I got to the fight that you do with the...
Spider? That's like the first boss.
Well, that's the game that I played. And then I got to a part where you fight a dude with a sword, like he's in purple armor or something like that.
Okay.
It was really hard at the time. You know, I wandered around that stupid castle fighting those stupid dolls.
Yes.
For like 3 hours until Marionette I actually figured out. Oh man,
Marionette, yeah,
pissed me
those
off.
Things were a pain in the ass.
So one day I would like to, and I know that you can get the Devil May Cry HD collection for pretty cheap these days. I think just today I saw that it was $15 on Amazon. So one day I might do that, but I technically still have the PS2 collection in shrink wrap on my shelf.
Wow. That did not help you with trivia.
No. You know what? Strangely, my readings of The Divine Comedy in my car by audiobook did.
Who knew that would come through? Blue, you want to read Mailbag?
Yes, indeed, I
open,
do.
Open it up. See what's in there.
Okay, I'm opening it up. Man, the buckle on this thing's starting to rust. Okay. Not sure if you saw Hideki Kamiya tell Kotaku to eat shit after they trashed him for not understanding PC games / Steam. If you did, what are your thoughts on game journalism / reviewing, etc.? Getting better or worse? That was one hell of a tweet, I gotta say. You know,
is that 140 characters? That's pretty good.
No, that was an email, I believe.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was was it Mike McMurder or whatever?
The tweet. Yes, okay, I see what you're
from Kotaku was asking Kamiya if he actually read some read the article.
Yeah, that was kind of
Hideki Kamiya in PC Games. And he quotes it and replies back with, "Do you eat shit?" That has got to be the greatest rebuttal I've ever seen from from a member of the gaming media.
Right.
I don't know that it really reflects better or worse. Actually, the article itself, they actually changed it. The original title of the article was rather inflammatory, and it said that Hideki Kamiya was clueless. They have since changed that, which I think is good. I think the tenor of the article was probably, or at least the tenor of the headline, was probably not super professional.
And it also didn't have much fact checking going on, which is kind of a cornerstone for journalism.
The article itself, if you read the article, was more about the tendency of Japanese gamers and Japanese developers not to really focus on PC in general.
Sure.
And I think, to me, the worst thing about this was that they took his comments and sort of just made it like it was generally the opinion in Japan. I mean, I don't think that he probably would have appreciated that as much as maybe if they had sent him some interview questions about that. You know, what do you think about PC? As opposed to taking a tweet that says, "No, I don't really like it," and, you know, and making
it real journalism.
Well, here's the thing. They're not wrong. I mean, they're not wrong. PC is not a focus in Japan. I mean, look at things like Dark Souls, right? Dark Souls came across as that's just the most recent example. But they cite some pretty interesting information there, and I mean, I have to assume that they've at least researched that. But
to call a person originally clueless?
Yes, well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that is not, you know, I don't think that was very professional, and they did change it. Stephen Totilo apologized for that, and I think they should have. I would say that generally speaking, I don't have a lot of real nits to pick with gaming journalism as opposed to any other form of journalism. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I think has really been helpful about, at least for me, you know, that I've noticed is Twitter and social media, where now this stuff gets aired out. You know, I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about the British, over at Eurogamer, Robin Wainwright, I think was her name.
No, the girl was Lauren Wainwright.
Lauren Wainwright.
Rob Florence was.
That's right. So we talked about that, and it might have been that, you know, before maybe, you know, you'd get a post up on NeoGAF or something like that. But now that stuff gets out, and people talk about it and have serious discussions and bitch about it, you know, publicly, and people kind of are made to come to account on that. Right. And I think that's been really healthy, just having an open forum like that. And that's exactly where this took place also. I mean, this whole thing took place over Twitter also. Where someone told him, "Hey, did you see this article?" And, you know, he was like, "Oh, well, they're, you know, trolling."
Do you think that is going to slow halt, reverse the sensationalism of sites? And I say that because I remember one article, I think it may have been Kotaku's worst moment, where a guy wrote an article, nothing really to do with video games, about having sex on Sonic the Hedgehog sheets. I'm not sure if you guys have read that.
Yeah, but the other thing about
point, and it was, you know, I felt dirty after reading it.
Here's the thing, and you know, I know that this is not a cure-all answer for this, but Kotaku specifically you know, and it's easy to say this whenever they do something, you know, terrible, but they're not strictly reporters, right? I mean, they're not, I mean, they're technically a blog. So when they do something about like a video game themed cake, that's cool. That's not bad.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Is there a blog? Like, look, this is just general interest. You might like this. Here's a post some dude wrote about having sex on Sonic the Hedgehog sheets. You know what? You might not like it, but it's not like it's the Times or anything like that. So on one hand, it's like, yeah, they can sort of beg off and say, well, we're not really reporters. We can do this. But the fact is they're not. I mean, they're part of Gawker Media and, right. You know, they're there specifically for that. And I don't know that, you know, tasteless spin is unique to them.
Sure.
And I don't know that it's really getting worse. I think it's just, you know, people, they wouldn't do it if people didn't read it either, you know, and
it generates
buzz. Sure. People do what they, you know, find to come naturally. They'll click on it.
Which I think is a good segue into speaking of reviews, because that's something we don't do journalism, but reviews are bread and butter. And one of the things I've noticed is in the past, let's say with movie criticism, you may check out something Roger Ebert or like Pauline Kael, you know, fairly famous movie critics, has written about a film 10 or 20 years ago. But with video games, things move so fast, and I think the industry has set such a pace for itself, not only because of technology, but because of, you know, the cycle, something Sean Nola always talks about, where we're continually looking at what is next, what's on the horizon, and not really looking a month, a year ago, or anything like that. No one's looking, except for Jeremy, at reviews for, you know, last generation games anymore. And so because of that, because of the audience, I think people write reviews as being fairly disposable. And I think that's kind of a disservice. And maybe we, and myself included, need to cultivate an audience that looks at things a little bit deeper, you know, cultivates an interest in looking at things that aren't just in the here and now, but, you know, has something that's a little bit more, I don't know, lasting, important.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this kind of writing can get a little complicated, because there are reviews, and mm-hmm. then there are things that are more like features.
Sure.
To me, I mean, here's something about me. I tend to be a little mechanical about reviews, not in terms of, I mean, you know, I see a lot of reviewers complain about, I don't like to put numbers on my reviews. That's so gauche, you know, but we don't do that. We want people to read the text.
Right.
I kind of go the other way with it. And maybe it's just kind of because I'm a contrarian and I want to find reasons for other people to be wrong. But I kind of feel like, you know what, a review is a buyer's guide. And if you can't put a number on that thing to tell me why it's better to buy this than that, even if it's by 0.1, then maybe I'll go somewhere else for my review. You know, if you want to read something to me, if you want to give me a dissertation on the, you know, the elements of interactivity and, you know, what makes, you know, emergent gameplay, you know, that's, I mean, I enjoy that kind of writing. I really do. But I think it sometimes belongs somewhere else.
Okay.
And I think a review, my opinion of an ideal review is something that looks at maybe what a game strives to be and finds out how successful or unsuccessful it is in that attempt, and whether it is in the total balance of things, whether it is enjoyable or it is not enjoyable. And, you know, beyond that, it's all there also get to be some sticky situations with, you know, going on press junkets and things like that. Like the preview cycle, I sometimes can be really questionable, and that definitely affects the reviews eventually. So there's a whole other situation with that, and I don't disagree with you that reviews should maybe be something you know, a little bit more than graphics equals 5, you know, gameplay equals 6, you know, because no, I don't think anybody really finds that very interesting. And generally speaking, I agree. I think that we have a collectively, all of us, I think we have short-sightedness. I mean, I was talking with it was even on this show where we were talking about how things that are considered innovative now, they were doing 30 years ago in games, you know, the ability to carry your save over from one game to another one. I mean, they were doing that stuff on the Apple II, you know, and now we look at it and we're like, oh, it's so awesome. Commander Shepard can go over into my, you know, my third game and like all my choices go away. And we, you're right. I mean, we do have kind of this short-sightedness thing, stuff that was, you know, 10 years ago is considered ancient and irrelevant, but it really is still relevant. Yeah. And I think it's a matter of trying to figure out where those kinds of thoughts fit into the larger scheme of writing and remembrance and, you know, the legacy of different things. And I think we're getting better at that stuff. You know, another thing that just a little bit of food for thought on this, in fact, this was also on Kotaku, and I actually found this to be a really disappointing article. Did anybody see that thing about the greatest generation of gamers? Maybe not. There was
they had them during World War II? I didn't know that.
No. Well, what it was talking about, because I happen to believe this. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this right now, we are in a pretty unique position in respect to our relationship with this medium. We pretty much all grew up on it. You know, it's evolving into something different than it was before. I mean, it's in this constant state of flux, and I think we have a relationship with the medium that I'm not sure is really going to be replicated in the future, and I think we have a responsibility to, to carry that somehow, to make
sure. Couldn't that be said about anything? That's kind of a truism. Everything's always in changing flux. You know,
yeah, but
never step foot in the same river twice.
But think about the.
You could say that about music, about movies, anything.
You could, yeah. But
advertising.
Think about vinyl and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are people who have to, like the Library of Congress, they try and preserve media and what are the stories that we're told. I mean, when people start dying off or those things, I mean, just look at all the stuff that we don't get anymore. Everything, you know, used to be, if you ever go and listen to people talk to Nolan Bushnell, for example, mm-hmm. The forebears of this medium are still alive right now.
Yeah.
And we can talk to them. And we can ask them about, you know, what was it like when you created, you know, when you moved from your coin-op background into creating, you know, Atari and things like that. And, and I absolutely think there's a place for that. Whether it's in reviews per se, I don't know, journalism in general.
So it is, okay, so that I'm buying, is it that we are not creating a history as we should, as other mediums, as perhaps film has, is that what?
Potentially, but even film, I mean, stuff from early film is
right.
also gone. I mean, they didn't do that stuff, yeah. And they didn't think about it.
Okay.
Exactly,
yeah.
And we have a chance to do that now.
Okay. Yeah.
And not only just to for some but someone somewhere to archive stuff, but for us just to be aware that stuff is happening and to be cognizant and be interested mm-hmm. in the medium from that standpoint. And this op-ed in particular was really disappointing because it was more like, oh, mobile games suck, and now video games are going to be ruined forever. It was mm-hmm. really bad. But the concept really, really resonated with me. And I think we're doing a better job of that. So to bring this back to the original question, I think we are doing better on the offing, just, you know, all things considered. There are always going to be things out there that are questionable, but the difference now is I think we're more likely to call bullshit on that stuff.
Okay, yeah.
The downside is that we kind of call bullshit on everything all the time, constantly, so there is that noise factor, but I think that we are in a position now where we're talking more about that stuff and trying to be better. And I think even at Kotaku, I mean, this ended up, I guess, being a question a little bit about Kotaku and Hideki Kamiya, but I think they also want to be better. And I personally am a big fan of Stephen Totilo, and I like what he does with the site generally. And I think in general, I think all of the editors, Robert, you want your site to be the best it can be. I think everybody wants to do justice to the writing and the content that they put up. But I think also there are sometimes just some, you know, maybe the execution, just like anything. I mean, you don't always mm-hmm. stick the landing. So I think as long as we just read it, you know, I mean, like I said, this article ended up, actually, I found it to be really pretty insightful. You know, and in this case, it was about PC games not really being big in Japan. And guess what? PC games are not big in Japan among developers, among consumers. And why is that? And they were just using Hideki Kamiya as an example, and they didn't really do it very well. And he called them on it. Good for him.
Yeah. Blue, yeah, anything to add?
Well, I mean, I gotta tell you, I mean, one difference between, or one thing I was thinking about when you were mentioning the story about somebody having sex on Sonic sheets.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect an article like that to, like, show up on some other places like Joystick or whatever. So,
right.
And that's a blog, too. Why would Kotaku really need to dip into that territory? I mean, news is
it's
popular enough.
I mean, it caught my eye. I started reading it. You know, it was probably a catchy headline, and they're good at that. You know, I'm not going to say Kotaku is not really good at kind of catching your eye and making headlines, but I guess the danger is where sensationalism takes us. You know, is there a stronger need for, you know, to create headlines that are catchier, more, you know, more lurid than previous ones?
Yeah, but you know, the solution to that is to build a better reader. You know? Really? I mean, right. if it's something that you find offensive, do what I do. I don't click on things that I don't feel are going to be worthwhile to me, and you can do that too. They track those clicks and those links, and they know what's popular. Mm-hmm. Just don't click on it. Don't talk about it. Sometimes it makes it seem like, well, you're not plugged in because you're not talking about the latest outrageous thing that Kotaku did. So what? Mm-hmm. You know what? Just get involved. Just stay away from it. Yep. That's all you have to do.
Well, you know, I think they also, I could be referencing their old, the old version of the site, but I know they used to have, you know, the page views and how popular it is in the comments. Yeah.
Little flame fingers.
You know, on each article. So, I mean, it's, you know, kind of obvious which ones are doing well and which ones aren't, unfortunately.
Deagle, we make a lot of tentacle jokes here.
We do.
Make a lot of tentacles.
But we don't write entire posts about tentacles.
And we genuinely like the tentacles, though. That's the difference.
Especially when they're like rubber prosthetics.
Yeah. And if you like tentacles, and if you liked what you heard today, you'll probably love what we write. Head on over to tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, previews, discussions, and new release info. Check us out on Google Currents, where you can read us without the ads. If you like Twitter, like I said, that's where it's happening. Hideki Kamiya is on Twitter. Robert, are you on Twitter?
I think I am, at tech_gaming.
Blue?
Hey, I'm on Twitter, too, and I am at Blue Swim, BSWIM, as in Maria Ozawa.
Bringing it back. Very good.
Are you getting paid to mention her, Blue?
No, but this is the year. This is the year. Well, I not only break my 26-year dateless streak, I also date Maria Ozawa. This is the day I get that victory.
New Year's resolutions. Everybody make your resolutions. Stick with them. Sean Kirkland is not with us. Sean is at Sean Nola. Sage Morris Green at Samarage. You can find me humbly at Jeremy_Lamont on Twitter.
Capital M.
Capital M. Bastards, don't forget it. Humble.
Found at the end of-